Welcome to Just a Minute! Hello, Sue Perkins here, and as the minute waltz fades away, what a joy to welcome you to Just a Minute. Now time to introduce you to the four marvellous, talented and delightful people playing Just a Minute this week. They are Paul Merton, Desiree Birch, Tony Hawks and Jan Ravens. Please whoop and cheer for all of them. I'm going to ask them in a time-honoured fashion to speak on a subject that I give them for 60 seconds without hesitation, repetition or deviation, and we'll see how that goes. Paul, we are going to start with you. Okay. And the subject on the card is peanut butter. Can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitation, repetition or deviation on the peanut butter, please? And your time starts now.
A version of peanut butter was patented by John Kellogg, he of Kellogg's Corn Flakes fame, and this was really around about the 1890s. Peanut butter, if you look at the ingredients, is full of very good things. There's vitamins and there's a kind of sort of low-level fat, which is very good for lowering cholesterol.
Tony.
Did he say good twice?
He did.
Yes,
yeah.
I did. Very good, very good.
Yeah. It is very good.
It is very good. Yeah. Well, it's a correct challenge, Tony. You've got 42 seconds remaining on peanut butter and your time starts now.
Life is full of enormously difficult decisions that we have to make. The biggest, perhaps, is crunchy or smooth. What do you do? It depends on your mood. If you're feeling ebullient, perhaps you'll go for that crunchier flavour, or perhaps not, if you're a little more...
Paul?
Well, it was a repetition of perhaps.
Yes, it was.
But I'm quite happy for him to keep the subject.
Yeah. No, I'm very happy to hear what more you've got to say on that subject.
Oh, well, actually, coincidentally, I did this for A-level, so actually, I do know quite well.
OK, well, that was a correct challenge. You get the point. You also get the subject back with 22 seconds remaining, starting now.
I failed my A-level. You didn't buzz, did you, Tony?
Hopefully someone got in before me.
No. Tony, you'll be delighted to hear that you have the subject back. I'm looking forward. Bearing in mind you've done crunchy and smooth, it's going to be a very, very difficult 19 seconds for you. And your time starts now.
It's very smearable. So if you take it, perhaps put it on your dog.
Paul.
Oh, I hate to say this, but it's repetition of perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm so doubtful about things. I should, instead of perhaps, say definitely smear it on your dog.
I don't think you smear it on your dog. I think that might be an RSPCA issue. I think you can give it to your dog
to
laugh as they attempt to...
Well, you know, that's between me and the RSPCA.
Also, well done, you're the first person to have said smearable on Radio 4.
It's great to have these firsts under your belt.
Paul, that's a correct challenge.
Yes,
seems like many years ago we started this topic. Still such an evergreen. 13 seconds.
13 seconds.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it starts... Now.
I remember the RSPCA saying to me, you should never smear peanut butter onto your dog. I said, why not? They said, well, we had Tony Hawks.
Tony.
Lots of seds.
Yes, there was lots of seds, but...
Oh. Is that too small? Oh, well, yeah. Paul, carry on, then.
No, you have it. You pay the price for challenging.
Your generosity, gentlemen, is admirable, but there are rules that must be followed.
Yes, there are.
It was a correct challenge. And, Tony, I know you're going to love this. You've got the subject back again. With 4 seconds, 4 seconds, the marathon is not yet over, which is ironic because that's what marathons were made out of. One for the oldies there. You've got 4 seconds. Starting now.
I went to see Peanut Butter the...
Oh, no.
Deviation. He didn't say perhaps.
As I channel my illustrious predecessor, I enjoyed that interjection and therefore you'll get an extra point, but Tony still has the subject and miraculously only 1 second got chipped off that. We're all still here. I've had a birthday, but... 3 seconds, Tony, starting now.
Peanut Butter the Musical was magnificent. The dancing was incredible.
Tony speaking as the whistle went gets that point. That was a battle of the titans there. Now, Jan, you're with us next, and your subject is a tricky one, this one.
Mm-hmm.
Work-life balance.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah.
Work-life balance.
You've got 60 seconds to tell us all about it, and your time starts now.
I am a big fan of the work-life balance. I object to this world where people are expected to answer emails or reply to their messages at every single second. I remember holding a vigil for my poor dying mother and my brother having to take calls from a certain supermarket's building department at the bedside. Now, that seems to me to not show a good work-life balance. It's not very funny. It's also a little bit tasteless, possibly, for 6:30 on a whatever day it is. But any...
Oh. Friday. Well, yes, it's Friday today, but Monday when people are hearing this. So, actually, I withdraw my challenge.
I was going to give you an extra point for a factually correct challenge about scheduling, but you're right, it now has to be withdrawn because it was proved to be wrong. But
that's right, yeah.
Do you have any other challenge relating to...
Not at the moment, no.
I'm going to get you to keep that subject, Anne. You've got 22 seconds. You're smashing it. You've done an inordinate amount of work. Let's see if you can complete the job with 22 seconds remaining, starting now.
Many people, when they retire, discover that their work-life balance has been very much slanted towards work, and so they find that when they retire, and this particularly applies...
Repetition of retire?
Repetition of retire, indeed.
All right.
Oh, that's changed the temperature in the room there. And I like it a little chilly, so I'm moving on. So, you have 11 seconds on the clock, Desiree, to tell us about work-life balance, and your time starts now.
Work-life balance is a bit of a misnomer for people whose careers involve things that they are passionate about. It is difficult to have a work-life balance if you are a priest, for instance.
Desiree speaking as the whistle went, which means she gets that point. And Tony, we're with you next, my lovely. Now, your subject is an impulse purchase. I think we're all hoping that impulse purchase isn't peanut butter. We shall find out. You have a minute available to you, sir, and your time starts now.
A long time ago, I purchased a deodorant called Impulse, but not without mulling it over for a few days before I went ahead and made that particular buying activity happen. Now, well, let me I could say purchase because it's in the title, but I chose not to. Now, an impulse purchase is something that I do occasionally get myself caught up in. I was rowing up the River Thames one day, and to my left, or as we call it in the rowing game, I've said rowing now three times.
Paul?
A self-confessed repetition.
Yeah. Yep, you got him there. So you've got 26 seconds remaining to tell us about an impulse purchase starting now.
As I wandered around the British Museum's gift shop, I saw this giant sarcophagus and I thought to myself, that'd look lovely in the back garden. So I went up to the assistant behind the counter and I said, how much are you charging for your sarcophaguses? And they said, well, that one there, we can sell it to you for approximately £85. I thought, that's outrageous. I'm not paying that amount of money. I've come all the way from Great Portland Street to do this. I don't have to listen to this rubbish. And so they said to me, go!
Speaking of the whistle went, gains you the extra point. Congratulations there, Paul. And now we are with you, Desiree. Your subject is the historic church and tourist attraction, Westminster Abbey.
Okay.
So you... 60 seconds to tell us all about that. We are on tenterhooks. Your time starts now.
Many of us got a nice long look at Westminster Abbey on the television recently as we watched the president of my country sneak into church late as though he wasn't going to get caught going to the Queen's funeral a bit tardily.
Oh, I wanted to hear the rest of that. We might well get the opportunity yet. Tony, you challenged.
There was a slight hesitation.
There was a
little larger than slight.
There was a little.
A lady always likes to be a little slight.
There was a little dalliance with hesitation. Correct challenge, Tony. You get the point and you get 43 seconds to tell us all about Westminster Abbey, starting now.
I once used to go out with a girl called Abby who came from the Westminster area. And I used to call her Abigail Thompson, because that was her name. Now, Westminster Abbey is a great big church. Not a lot of people know this, so I thought it was important to clear it up here and now. couple of towers, one each side as you go in. Then as you walk up, there's pews on the left and the right, and you can sit down, worship, sing hymns, that kind of stuff. Anything else you need to know? I've got a website called
Yes.
But for Tim Berners-Lee, that would have been the most delightful moment. Dang you, the internet, responsible for so much pain and grief. Paul, your challenge.
Yes, unfortunately, a repetition of W, which was a shame.
Yeah, correct.
Believe it or not, I was going to say it three times.
a good steal, Paul. 7 seconds remaining. Westminster Abbey, what can you tell us about that venerable old pile of bricks starting now?
As I burrowed my way out of Brixton Prison, I suddenly found myself in the depths of Westminster Abbey. I looked around and there was a sarcophagus.
Well, that's the end of our opening round. With that, a few scores. We have Jan in fourth place, just behind Desiree, just behind Tony, with Paul inching just a little bit ahead. And Paul, we are back with you again and the terrible twos. Can you speak? It's really tickled one person in the audience.
Yes.
That's how this show rolls. One by one by one we get you. 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or debating on the terrible twos, please. Your time starts now.
Our school football team had a terrible job trying to find somebody who could play right back. No matter who we put in that position, they were always awful. There was Tom, Bob, Sid, Danny, Robert, William. None of them could really understand the defensive qualities that were needed to play in that particular part of the football team. I've simply pointed football, I think.
Repetition of football.
Paul knew it.
I knew it.
But you're right, a correct challenge, Tony. You get the subject, which is the terrible twos. 37 seconds remaining, starting now.
Toddlers, as we desire...
He's clearly drunk.
It's hard to know what that was, Paul, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a sort of like a new language evolving in front of us. I suppose we could call it deviation.
Yes.
Or hesitation.
Hesitation.
And also repetition of...
I was doing an impression of a toddler.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to give the subject to you, Paul. 33 seconds remaining after that correct challenge. The terrible twos starting now.
One theory as to why two-year-olds do have the ability to throw tantrums is because they don't really have a full... control of their vocal vocabulary. So they're trying to tell you something, but the words won't come to them, so they get very angry. Now, there are various tips of how to deal with a toddler who is having this trouble trying to get across its message to you. First of all, you mustn't punish them in any way. You must sit them down and say, look, if you make that noise again, you're going out the window. And they understand this intrinsically, that there would be a bad thing to do to carry on in this tempestuous way.
Paul, speaking as the whistle went, gets that point. And Jan, we're back with you.
Yes.
Oh, this is a wonderful one.
Yes.
All's well that ends well.
Oh.
Lovely
subject.
That's
nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's good.
Very
okay.
nice. You've got 60 seconds to tell us everything you know about all's well that ends well. And your time starts now.
All's Well That Ends Well is by William Shakespeare, a playwright who wrote it in the 17th century or possibly 16th. And it is known as a problem play because it is not quite certain whether it's a comedy or a tragedy, and it has certain ethical dilemmas. The heroine, Helena, is in love with a bloke called Bertram, which doesn't sound very attractive, but nonetheless, she's obsessed. And she goes after him and tries to get him. He doesn't want to know. His mum is the Countess of Rossillon.
Ooh, Tony.
I was going to say, it's not a comedy. We clear that one up.
Yeah, it's a problem play. Yeah. It's a problem. Yeah.
She didn't actually do anything wrong. I just buzzed in to try and get a laugh, which I just about got. So I would like to apologise.
Well, you can withdraw your challenge. We're back with you. You've got 18 seconds on the clock, Jan, and your time telling us about All's Well That Ends Well starts now.
The leading female character comes up with a trick to trap the hero, and she puts herself in a bed where
where a woman he loved was supposed to be, and thus she makes the marriage consummate.
That's how I believe English literature should be taught.
A perfect delivery of the narrative of the play. Congrats, Jan. You get the point there, because you were speaking as the whistle went. And, Tony, we're with you now. What we've got for you? We've got false starts. False starts. I'm sure you've never had one of those. False starts. Let's hear about it. 60 seconds, your time starts now.
The British government is doing a terrific job. There is an example of a start that is false. Or a false start, if you prefer to call it that. It's mainly known in athletics, where runners...
Well, there was a slight hesitation there.
There was a slight hesitation, and normally I would let it go, but Tony is a very experienced player of the game, and he's been quite pugnacious in his own challenges. So we'll let you have that one, Paul. I suspect the ping-pong will start again between the two of you.
Yes, it's all got very pugnacious.
So, you have the topic. 44 seconds, please, Paul, and false start starting now.
False start is a character in Shakespeare's play. He's a great fat bloke. And he's a friend of the king. And essentially, he's got all these marvellous speeches about, fellow well met and all this sort of stuff. And he drinks a lot of wine and tankards and beer and all that kind of stuff. And
John,
didn't you say all kinds of stuff twice?
No. It's got nothing to do with you. What do you mean?
There was some repetition there sadly.
Was.
But I was, to be honest, marvelling at the Falstaff joke. So. Yeah. 31 seconds remaining for you, Jan, with that correct challenge on false start starting now.
A false start is something that
I was just illustrating the point.
Yeah. Well, you've done that admirably to the point where Paul's interruption, which I presume is for...
Hesitation.
Yes, is correct. And 28 seconds on a false start, starting now.
As I stood on the starting line, I looked at the other three runners next to me and I thought, I want to win this race. The whistle went, followed by a gun and a cannon. That was our start to make the great big challenge in front of us something that we could clutch to our bosom. And as I paced myself forward, yard by 3 feet, I could see the spectators. Why were us then?
Tony.
Well, if he keeps running like that, then there hasn't been a false start.
I was about to say... about a false start. You stopped me.
I feel that it's time to give Tony the benefit of the doubt.
How many seconds has he got then?
Oh, he's got seven, which
seven
is not...
Seven seconds, you see.
The benefit of the doubt will inevitably be cast upon all of our panellists during the course of this show. But it falls upon Tony right now, with 7 seconds remaining, to tell us about false starts. Your time starts now.
It's 2010. Everyone is expecting Usain Bolt to win the world championships. The whistle doesn't go because they use a gun. Oh, it does.
Tony speaking as the whistle went gets that point. And that's the end of that round. Scores, of course, Jan still in fourth place, but it's a very tightly run contest. This just narrowly behind Desiree, who is narrowly behind Tony, who's narrowly behind Paul. So that's where we stand at the moment, for those of you who enjoy listening to the programme for numbers. Paul, we're back with you, my lovely. Your subject is... We're staying on a literary theme here. Reader, I married him. I'm interested where you're going to take us.
Better watch out, or I'll be saying the whole plot of Jane Eyre.
Oh, Jane Eyre, thanks for that.
Paul, can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitation, repetition or deviation on the subject? Reader, I married him, starting now.
It is the famous last line of a novel by Charlotte Bronte called Jane Eyre. It's not one I've ever read. I believe she marries Rochester, which is a small town in Kent. So there must have been a bit of a ceremony, quite busy, I imagine. Lots of guests there crowding into the church hall. I don't know why it's become so well known as a piece of verse. Not really that. It's prose, I suppose. I do believe there were many people in the olden days who used to say to each other, that is, for me, my favourite novel. I love to be able to gander through the pages and say to myself, if only I'd lived that life. The author who I'd mentioned earlier initially wrote under a pseudonym, which I can't remember it was, but let's say it was Bert Higgins. That wasn't exactly how the book was published, but nevertheless, a lot of people said, this is the work.
John. Repetition of book? It was a repetition of book.
Yes,
I think we had it right at the very, very beginning. So that was a real extraordinary listen there. So a tough challenge, but a fair one.
Oh, yeah.
Gives you the point and 14 seconds on Reader, I Married Him, starting now.
Reader,
I married him. My first husband was a comedy writer who I spotted above the Horse and Groom on Great Portland Street. He was playing songs...
Oh. Did you say above the Horse and Groom?
Yes.
Was he on the roof?
No, he was in a room above the pub.
Oh, you didn't make that clear, I see. That's deviation. OK, so, Jane Eyre...
Sadly, disputing floor plans is not one of the key tenets of Just a Minute Challenges. So I enjoyed it, but I'm going to stick with you, Jan, for 2 seconds on Reader, I Married Him, starting now. Reader, I... Paul.
Hesitation.
Oh, get out.
There was time between you saying now there and me butting.
There was time between... And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give Paul the point for factually being correct, but I'm going to give Jan the benefit of the doubt to carry this subject. Because I'm here for tough love.
Yeah.
Okay. Your time starts now.
When...
Jan, we remain with you because you have our next topic, and it is sabotage. Yes, that's delighted the members of the audience here. I'm sure you've never taken this course of action, but can you speak on the subject? Can you speak of sabotage, please, for 60 seconds? Your time starts now.
One of the worst forms of sabotage is self-sabotage, which is where you do things that make you go in, oh, no.
You've illustrated it again.
I know.
Self-sabotage.
I know.
Yeah. Tony, your challenge.
No, she's still talking on the false start realm. No hesitation.
Absolutely correct challenge. You've got 50 seconds to tell us everything you know, you rogue, about sabotage, and your time starts now.
I did French A-level, so I happen to know it comes from the word sabot, with a T at the end, and that is because these were shoes that French workers wore, a bit like clogs.
Paul.
Repetition of French.
Yes, a repetition of French A-level. Yes, it is with you, Paul. Sabotage, please. 38 seconds, starting now.
Sabotage is a film produced in 1936 by Alfred Hitchcock. It's one of his British movies, and he admitted many years later that he made a terrible mistake in the narrative. A small boy is carrying a package on a bus, unaware that inside the parcel is a bomb. And the great filmmaker admitted that it was awful to let the explosive... Another word for bomb.
Tony.
Hesitation.
Yes, correct challenge. So, Tony, you've got 17 seconds remaining on sabotage. Let's hear what you've got to say on the subject, starting now.
You could argue that this game is all about sabotage. We listen, try to stop people when they're going well. We dive in with our silly, petty little challenges.
Well, just going off of what Tony just says, I want a challenge on the repetition of we. As a silly, petty little challenge. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I thought it was a calling. I thought I was being called to do it.
That's
by
fair
higher power.
You're sabotaging my rather poor speech anyway, so yeah. I don't mind.
No, I'm going to make sure it stays with you now, Tony. but I'm going to give Paul an extra point because I enjoyed the challenge. And what is this silly game without the odd laugh or two?
Exactly.
So, 7 seconds, please, Tony, starting now.
If you are trying to sabotage your enemy, you must hide behind a bush or something suitable.
We are sadly approaching the final round.
Oh.
I know, and thank you for that almost unelicited sigh of despair. Mm. But we've got the final round with you, Tony. You've got a great topic here. Alan Shearer. Alan Shearer. Let's see what we've got to say on the venerable Alan Shearer. 60 seconds starting now.
I happen to know that Alan Shearer is a huge fan of this programme and no doubt is listening as I speak. So I need to say that he's absolutely terrific and not dull at all when he's rambling. Oh, I've been a bit rude there, haven't I, saying rambling?
Paul.
No, I didn't buzz.
Oh, something's been sabotaged.
That's Alan Shearer buzzing in from home.
I did.
Oh, did you?
When I did. I thought there was a bit of hesitation.
There wasn't actually. You walked into a repetition of rambling just as that went as well, so you could have had that. But yes, I'm going to accept that challenge, Jan. You get the topic of Alan Shearer. Which I know is one of your specialists.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to give you the full 44 seconds to tell us everything you know. about that Geordie scoring machine starting now.
The brilliant thing that Alan Shearer did was not to become a manager, which is what...
Well, yes, deviation, but he was a manager for a few weeks at Newcastle United. But it was hesitation.
Yes, it was. That's a correct challenge by any estimation. So 36 seconds on Alan Shearer, not on Alan Shearer, he's not here. on the topic of Alan
Shearer. Certainly couldn't be on him for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's not like being on the horse and groom, is it?
36 seconds, please, on Alan Shearer. Your time starts now.
Alan Shearer has to learn to play to the whistle, and people at home might be impressed. Damn.
Back with you, Tony.
Hesitation.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You've got 32 seconds,
I'm afraid,
in a topic that's already making peanut butter look short. Yeah. 32 seconds starts now.
Alan Shearer was very proud of his celebration he did after he scored goals. And it was deeply unimpressive, really. All he did was put his right arm in the air and run. He actually toyed with the idea of patenting it.
Close but no cigar. Paul, your challenge.
It got a bit garbled there.
It was a little bit of hesitation. It wound down.
Yes.
16 seconds. Paul, Alan Shearer, you know the drill. Starts now.
I once owned a sheep called Alan, and I thought, how on earth am I going to find someone who will be an Alan Shearer? So I went down to the local job centre and I put a card up in their window advertising for a shepherd, and who should step forward? None other than Tony Hawks. He said,
Wonderful stuff. Paul speaking as the whistle went, which means he gets that final point. And talking of the points, let's see where we stand at the end of the show. In fourth place, but only by a gnat, we've got Desiree, followed by Jan, followed by Tony. But today's winner, please give it up for Mr. Paul Merton. And there, my lovelies, I'm afraid we do have to leave you. But first, thanks to our delightful players of the game today. Paul Merton, Desiree Birch, Tony Hawks and Jan Ravens. We are indebted to Ian Messiter, who devised the show, and, of course, the wonderful Nicholas Parsons, who chaired Just a Minute for over 50 magnificent years. We also thank Caroline Barlow for blowing her whistle so delicately. And I'd like to thank Michelle, our audience member today, for providing that whistle after our whistle. Rajiv Kare, and it was a BBC Studios production, and this is Sue Perkins saying thanks so much for listening wherever you are, and please do join us again next time we play Just a Minute. ¶¶